test you for use of sense.
Dumelang, le letso ke Mosawe Nkosi Mlambo, le loka la komiti le tswang Gauteng.
Good morning all, Ellen Prince, Western Cape.
Mr. Singh, member of the committee representing KwaZulu-Natal.
Thank you, Chair. My apology for being late. I just fell three times in the lift that it dropped with me inside.
Okay.
I'm telling you, I almost had a heart attack. Yeah, I'm Beyers Smith from Limpopo.
Good morning. I'm Kathy. Trauma counseling. I'm Kathy Libuskagani, member of the committee.
From the Good morning. My name is Kello Ramasala from the Department of Legal Services. Thank you very much.
Good morning, I'm Tipo Mashaila from the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform Legislation.
My name is Nati Mjangwane. I'm from Parliamentary Legal Services. Thank you, Chairperson.
Good morning, Chairperson, honorable members, colleagues. My name is Tabang. My surname is Musweta. I come from Mpumalanga Provincial Legislature.
Good morning, honourable members and colleagues. I'm Jocelyn Mueti. I'm the liaison officer for the Gauteng province.
Good morning, honourable members and colleagues. My name is Winnie Ngubane. I'm a legal advisor from the Gauteng Provincial Legislature. Thank you.
Morning. I'm Peter Kutsi from the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Skumbuzo Nyambi from the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform.
Good morning. My name is Tami Pembe from the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform.
Good morning. I'm Steven Ledoba from the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Lucinda LaRue. I'm from the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor.
Good morning. My name is Maibonga Makina from the Independent Media.
Good morning. My name is Amanda Zindlani. I'm the committee assistant.
Good morning, President.
Morning, honorable members, colleagues. Naomi Lizaka, Legal Services.
Good morning, honorable members, colleagues. My name is Nomfuzo Dano, Provincial Liaison Officer for the Northwest Province.
Good morning, honorable members and colleagues. My name is Lerato Tsingeng. I'm from the Northwest Provincial Legislature.
Morning, everyone. My name is Khatazo Ngiyan. I'm from Free State Legislature.
Good morning. My name is Justice Mulafo from Parliament Communications.
Morning. I'm Zeline from SABC.
Good morning, Chair and honorable members. My name is Connie Seiko, Legal Services, Free State Legislature.
Morning, Chairperson. MPs and colleagues, I'm Zagiti from the Mineral Council.
Thank you very much. At the extreme corner there, the left.
Good morning, Chairperson. I don't know if this is on. Good morning, Chairperson, honourable members. My name is General Smith and I'm a monitor from Parliamentary Monitoring Group. I'll ask my colleagues to introduce themselves. They're on training.
Good morning. My name is Sianda Pali. I'm a trainee monitor from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Okay. Morning, my name is Oliswa Maliwa. I'm also on training from PMG.
Kanya Tawaga, honorary members, also from the training PMG.
Morning, I'm Onela Makwata. I'm doing training at PMG.
Thank you very much, and once more, welcome. Special welcome to all members from different provinces that are here. I've got few apologies here. Yeah? Honorable Pakis, Honorable Connie, and Honorable Nita, and apologies from the Honorable Minister. They are attending special cabinet locutra, deputy ministers, and the DG. Thank you very much, Honorable Members. We will be dealing with the communal property. Association bill, which is indeed attracting a lot of interest. Without perhaps wasting any time, we'll turn over to the department to lead us with the presentation. Advocate Ramashala, thank you. Wonderful. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. Indeed, it is a privilege for us to be presenting this bill to the Honorable Committee. The Communal Preparedness Amendment Bill, it's a bill which means that it amends existing legislation. It's not a new piece of legislation as such. It amends the Communal Property Associations Act. It's a 1996 Act, Act number 28 of 1996. The Act regulates communal property associations. The associations are legal entities that have been established by law to hold property on behalf of communities. Many of them are beneficiary communities whose land would have been restricted to them by the department. Since the promulgation of the 1996, we have had more than 1,500 CPAs registered with the department, and the department has been monitoring them, but there have been a lot of operational as well as compliance challenges, because they have to comply with what the Act provides for. So we've had a lot of challenges. And despite the department's intervention measures in the past, we continue to have these problems. Now, the objective of the bill is to amend the Act so that at least we are able to deal with some of the challenges that we've been experiencing over the years. There are a number of challenges, the first one being the authority of the state to intervene in CPA affairs. Remember, a CPA largely owns the land that is also owned by the community. So it's in a sense, a privately owned property. So as and when the department tries to intervene to ensure that there is compliance, there is a consultation with the stakeholders, sometimes the department gets challenged by the same CPAs to say that the department has no business in interfering in our affairs. So that's one of the first challenges. And secondly, as I've indicated, we have a lot of governance problems in CPAs. CPAs by law are supposed to put together governance structures in the form of a committee. The committee is the one that is responsible for the day-to-day management of the CPA affairs. If I can maybe just give a picture for those who may be familiar with the workings of the CPAs. As I've indicated, you would have a situation where land is restricted to a community of beneficiaries, and that community forms an association with the CPA. By law, the association is required to put together a governance structure. So they've been appointing committees. Now, these are committees that are elected by the association or the community members, and are supposed to operate along democratic principles, where members of the community have a say in terms of how the CPA is governed and similar matters. Now, we have heard instances where, for instance, as one of the first challenges relating to governance, where persons who are elected to these governance structures wants to hold office in perpetuity. They do not want to leave office when their term of office expires. Now, you have a situation where you start to have people who become leaders forever. And thereby not abiding with the democratic principles that the community and the department, the state in general, expects them to do. As I've indicated, we also have many instances of non-compliance by the governance structures. They are required to report to the department in terms of the affairs of the CPAs, on financial issues, the issue of holding regular elections. That sometimes does not happen. In some instances, it does not happen. When the department, as I've indicated, in some instances tried to intervene, sometimes we have had instances where we were interdicted as the department, saying that we cannot interfere in the matters of CPAs. The issue of self-interest, as I've indicated, the committee members are supposed to serve the communities, but on the long run, you have instances where they are looking after their own interests, instead of the interests of the CPAs and the communities. we have also had instances where the CPAs, in this case, I'm talking about the governance structure, the committee of the CPA, they would dispose of the property of the community, sometimes without consulting or engaging or the approval of the community, because they're involved in the day-to-day management of the structure. Now we are through the bill trying to come with provisions that will strengthen accountability, and we're introducing a new provision related to the reporting so that we can be able to monitor the CPAs, the department, and also strengthen provisions around offences so that we can deal with non-compliance. Now, generally, the bill seeks to introduce the following. Firstly, the bill seeks to establish a CPA office in the department. This will be a specialized office to deal strictly with CPA issues. As things stand now in the department, we simply have, I think it's a directorate that deals with CPA issues. And then we further to that create the post of the registrar of CPAs. The registrar will be the head of the CPA office in terms of administrative and governance issues. And then we further provide for the functions of the registrar in the bill. We also, as I've indicated, trying to strengthen checks and balances with regard to the disposal of CPA land, which has become a serious problem. And then we are also introducing strengthening provisions in the bill that deals with dispute resolution. Our CPAs are mired in a lot of disputes. We have had instances where CPA members have killed one another in some instances, where they are always in the courts fighting over CPA property. So it's a serious problem. The idea is to ensure that before they take that dispute to the courts, at least there are mechanisms that the department has put in place to ensure that it helps them to resolve that dispute. As I've indicated again, we are introducing provisions relating to offences to ensure that there are consequences for non-compliance, and also a reporting mechanism so that when the department is required to report to Parliament, at least we have the information from the CPAs themselves. Coming to the specific provision in the Act that we are amending through the bill, starting with the definitions, there are mainly two new definitions, which is just a standard way of defining them. There is nothing contentious about the content of the definitions. Because we're introducing an office and the registrar, it's important that we define them simply by reference to the specific sections in the Act that refer to those entities. Secondly, there is an amendment to the section of the Act that deals with the application of the Act. Basically CPAs apply to land that has been restituted through the Land Claims Court in the main. Now we are making it clear that it's not only the Land Claims Court that restitutes land, it is also the High Court in some instances through some agreements. So that's why we are providing for any other competent court in addition to the Land Claims Court only. And then also the you will see that in the Act or in the bill, the section that deals with the application of the Act, it provides for instances where a CPA must be established as a condition, for instance, for restituting land to that particular community. We are making it clear in the Act that a decision to form a CPA, it must be a community decision. Although a condition is imposed by the minister must have been informed by the community that it is the intention that the CPA be established. Thirdly, the provisions we're introducing relate to the registration of property. As you will be aware, those of you who are involved in property administration, It is a requirement in terms of our laws in general that properties must be registered, which means that there must be plans that are approved in terms of the Land Survey Act, and then registration take place. I have talked about the establishment of the CPO office. The office is not established as a Chapter 9, as an example, office. It's an office that is established in the department within the public service. The only difference is that it is a specialized office to deal with CPAs only, with the registrar as the head of that office, and with the registrar having specific powers derived from the Act, which no one can take away from the registrar, including the minister. The office is going to be headed by the registrar, who is appointed by the minister, as I've indicated. But as I've said again, the office is established within the department. The bill also provides for the functions of the registrar. Those of you who have copies of the bill, maybe it's important to refer to the bill as I go through the presentation. You'll find them in clause 2D. Of the bill, where it is specifically provided for the functions of the registrar. You will see there are a number of functions. We just summarized them. Basically to say that the office is responsible for the registration of CPAs, for monitoring their operations, and then also ensuring that governance issues are taken care of. That CPAs are properly governed in terms of the Act. The proposed amendments continuing. These are the provisions that we have identified in the Act that we believed require strengthening by way of amendments. Firstly, to make the point. In the Act through the bill, when it becomes an Act, that CPAs as legal entities they do not exist in isolation from the community. Basically, a CPA is a beneficial community. The fact that a community has deemed it fit in terms of the law to create a legal entity to be able to transact on a day-to-day does not mean that the legal entity, at the end of the day, can do as it pleases to the exclusion of the beneficiary community members, which has been the case in some instances. We are simply trying to make it clear that this is a legal entity that is created by a community that is accountable to the community. And also that you will see that the Act provides for the adoption of a constitution of a CPA. Which is a founding document that clearly defines the powers and the powers, rights, and functions of the CPA committee members, the persons who are responsible for governance, as well as the community that established the CPA. What are their powers? One of the most important things you will find for those who have got a copy of the principal Act. At the end, there is a schedule that provides for matters which must be provided for in the constitution of a CPA. It talks about a number of things, including the identity of the community members, which is the beneficiary, which is very much important in every CPA setting. It is important to identify who are the community members, and that information must be provided for in the CPA constitution. Why that is important? Because it on the long run leads to disputes where people who may not be members claim membership and claim ownership, and persons who are the real owners and members sometimes are excluded from membership or in the affairs of the CPA. And when it also comes to voting, where they have to make decisions for the CPA, it becomes an issue as to who can vote and who cannot vote, who can take part and who cannot take part. So it's important that those matters that are providing the question are dealt with clearly, and that's why in the bill we are making it clear that for a consent to be adopted, it must be adopted by more than 60% of the beneficiary community members to ensure that there is a requisite majority. And that majority is not only required for the adoption of the constitution of the CPA, it also applies to certain instances which we think are extremely important, like when the constitution is to be amended, for instance, like when the CPA wants to dispose of land, when they want to sell, lease, or do whatever they want to do with the CPA, land in particular, we still require that 60% of the beneficiary community must approve of that transaction. In terms of the act only talks about a simple majority, and we have had instances where, as I've indicated in my introductory remarks, that we have had instances where CPA land has been sold, and the community is not aware that the land has been sold, because those who are responsible for the management in the committees could simply rent a small crowd, and as a result, transact for the CPA when the members of the committee are not even aware of those kind of transactions. Now, we are introducing a new provision through the bill that says that because there are already instances where land will be restituted and then a CPA established, then they continue to transact on behalf of the community. Then they decide to sell the land, for instance, and then keep the proceeds. Sometimes it happens with the approval of the committee. Sometimes it doesn't happen with the approval. Now, what we are introducing is an instance where, because restitution remember would have occurred at the instance of the department would have paid for that land to be restituted in the first instance. Now, we are saying that where a CPA legitimately decides to sell land, it must first offer that land back to the department for sale so that the department can further distribute those who are in need in case they no longer need that land. So that is very important to ensure that the department's redistribution programs succeed. I have spoken about the disputes that continue to mar CPAs, that we are strengthening provisions in the Act that deals with the resolution of disputes. The department would assist CPAs with the appointment of experienced persons with a view to help communities to resolve that dispute. I have indicated that we have had instances where there are serious governance problems. The department has deemed it fit to strengthen the powers of the department in terms of intervening in the affairs of the CPAs where things are not going well. As I've indicated, we have had instances where persons who are elected to serve in the committees refuse to leave office when their term of office comes to an end. We have got individual members in the committees who are engaged in acts of corruption. And it becomes important that the CPAs be rid of those kind of elements. Now, the Act, through the bill, seeks to give the department, through the registrar, the power to dissolve a CPA where it's non-functional. It's no longer serving the interests of the community. And then indulge upon the community to appoint a new committee. Or if there is a problem with an individual, for instance, where the CPA says to the department, we have a member who has become a law unto himself or unto herself, that we request that he be excused from serving in a committee, the registrar will have those powers. And of course, that, like I'm saying, it will be at the request of the community. And then the registrar will have the powers to dissolve a CPA committee or dismiss a member, and then request the committee itself again, or request the CPA, the community, to elect a replacement, a committee or member. And during that period when the community is required to establish another committee, the registrar has the power to appoint an interim committee from amongst the members of the community themselves. I have spoken about the disposal of immovable property, that it must be with the 60% approval of the community, and it must be first offered to the department for purchasing. When it comes to the disposal of movable property, things like it may be your equipment, and we believe that it is still proper that we can leave that to the majority of the CPA members to decide upon. Remember, this will be the transactions that the CPA committee will be involved in, but the CPA committee will still have to get the approval of the beneficiary community in the form of 50%, more than 50% of that community. And there have been instances where, for instance, when the bill was published for comment, you know, some of the comments that we received from some of the CPAs was that, you know, we are interfering too much in the affairs of CPAs. But on the other hand, the department is saying that intervention is justified in the sense that communities come to the department complaining about how CPAs are run. But there are certain matters that should be able to be transacted upon with ease. I mean, for instance, you may have a CPA that is involved in, for instance, farming activities. If they want to purchase things like seeds, fertilizers, and sometimes they have had many of them in stock, they're no longer, they want to be disposed of. I mean, you can't say that they must call a meeting with the 60% to be able to dispose of things that are of a minor value. So that they should be able to deal with relative ease. The Act provides for putting CPAs under administration in instances where they are no longer operating efficiently. We are strengthening those provisions in the bill, and you may ask why we are doing that. The simple reason is that, as I've indicated, the CPA is a legal entity that operates more or less like a company. So there are legal consequences to that establishment as a juristic person. And lastly, Chair, Honourable Members, the provisions that we are strengthening, as I've indicated in my background information, relate to offences and reporting. With regard to offences, we have had, as we get reports as the department from the communities, that a lot of offences relate to financial mismanagement of our CPA properties and assets, and we have deemed it important that we make it an offence not to comply with the provisions of the CPA that relates to finances. We're talking about instances where it may not necessarily be a pure criminal act, you know, it may not necessarily be acts of theft or anything like that, but where the CPA, through its constitution, says that these are financial measures that must be complied with by anybody who is an officer, for instance, in our committee, and the person does not comply with those provisions, that becomes an offence. We have also had reported instances where persons who are in committees, when they realize that it is time to leave office, they destroy documents with a view to make it difficult for the new committees to properly administer the CPAs. And in some instances, they're doing that to hide acts of corruption or criminality that have taken place during the term of office. So I'm making it an offense explicitly that whoever destroys the documents that relate to the administration, management, governance of the CPA commits an offence. And also, we have had instances where, for instance, when there have been disputes, as I've indicated, in some instances, members killing one another, the department will try to appoint a mediator to assist, and the mediator will be obstructed in his or in her efforts to try and resolve the dispute. In some instances, the mediators will be barred from even trying to assist by those who have got vested interest in the affairs of the CPAs. Now, we're making it an offense for any person to obstruct a mediator from doing his work or her work in terms of the Act. And also, lastly, Chair and Honourable Members, is provisions linked to reporting, as I've indicated. The Act requires the Minister to report to Parliament on the affairs of the CPAs For us to be able to do that, we require proper reporting by the CPAs themselves. That takes us to the end of the presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much for the presentation. Indeed, throughout the country, CPAs are struggling. Very, very few that are indeed successful. I only know one which is in Bela Bela, that is one of the best. Others indeed are struggling. Honorable members, it's over to you now for question. Honorable Smith. Honorable Kerr. Lavaska. All of you, honorable members. Okay. In that sequence.
Thank you, Chair. This is actually a very important subject. And it comes to basic rights of communities, and also the difference between the rights, because we've got two South Africas. We've got the South Africa where people have got all the rights of ownership, which is outside of the tribal areas, outside of this communal property areas, where people actually have got ownership of the property, that they've got means to become part of the economy of this country. And then we've got the community areas where people just stay and is excluded from the rest of the country in terms of property, the property economy, if you can call it like that. But let me get to my questions. Firstly, I want to know, in terms of land, because what is important, those land, we've got different purposes of the land. You're going to have land which is ideal for grazing. You're going to have land that is ideal for development. You'll have land that is ideal for agricultural activities like planting, you know, where the soil is fertile. So my question is, do we have zoning of that land? So that we, because once land gets sold off, is it being sold off and developed in such a way that it maximizes on the potential of that land? Because this is something we need to consider around this as well. Do the department know how much land was sold already? And what measures is in place to regulate that already? Is there any measures? If not, what plans are there to have proper oversight over that? Because if you don't have that kind of control, also when you're going to sell, you have to you have to register it on a separate deed or whatever, you know, like you're going to do in your towns and other places. If I want to subdivide, that's the right word, sorry. Then I see there's a reference to 60% of the beneficiaries or communities, that need to vote in favor of certain, you know, in terms of the constitution, amendments to the constitution, and so forth. Now, my question is, how do you differentiate between who is beneficiaries, who is actually community members, and who are not? Because you find people from all over staying there within that same area. So, and then, you know, also the kids, the grandkids, and so forth. If we look at that, so how will that be determined? And how many members are there? Because if you don't know what is the total number of beneficiaries, how will you determine what is 60%? The process of decision making. I mean, we are a democratic country, so, you know, we go through election process. How will this decision making process, will it be an electoral process? And then also to ensure that there's no intimidation, because people will intimidate, because once you talk about wealth, people start intimidating each other so that individuals can benefit from it. And people are already feeling insecure within those areas, so they are scared they will be chased away if they don't make a decision which is in line with the big decision makers within that community. In terms of the constitution, and this is something that we have to really take, and I'm concerned because it doesn't address it in this bill at all. Because, let's be quite honest about it, tribal areas were established by the apartheid regime to separate people based on race, to keep them apart, and to control them by the masses. That's what it was established. And it is still sustained today. Because if you are not of that community, you can't really become a community member or stay within that. You can't have ownership of that if you are not of the same tribe. So are we sustaining racial divide and separation? And then if that is the case, you know, we're talking about limitation, you know, in terms of your basic human rights, which is also the general rights within South Africa, which is association, movement, access, ownership. So do we have go areas and no-go areas? Because that's what is sustained here. When we talk about residential property, why can't it, this is an opportunity for government to fix this by giving individual ownership of residential properties. How difficult can that be? To give title deeds to the residential property. I can understand the grazing land and the general land that is not occupied by a specific family or individual, that must be within a communal trust or whatever, you know, if you within the CPA. But then my question is, why don't these people have got share certificates? Because what proof do they have that they actually have got ownership of that communal property? My last question is the role of traditional leaders, Dunas, Hoshis, within this whole scenario, decision making, authority, because, you know, when we look at the constitution, we look at the roles and the responsibilities of tribal leaders, but we call them tribal authority, so now they have got authority. So there's a bit of conflict there, but I want you to explain to me how will they fit into this. Thank you.
Honorable Prince, Honorable Mlambo,
I will start, Chair. It didn't. He said in that order, so this will be the order. Thank you, Chair. Let me also welcome the presentation. I've got only two questions. I think some of the questions were covered by my colleague, Honorable Smith, in terms of victimization and intimidation. We know what is happening in our communities. You know, you spoke of this 60% where members of the community will say, no, this individual is unruly. And only to find that members of the community or those CPA members have ganged up against that individual who was able to see corruption that is taking place within and wants to be a whistleblower. In that case, what do you do as the department? Because we'll find that the majority might think they're doing things right, whereas they are pursuing acts of corruption, you know, against that individual. The second one will be on the constitution. Is it because cases, they differ from one community to another? Is it a standard constitution, or communities need to be the drafters of their own constitution and adopt it according to their conditions, or the department will just come and dictate to the communities? I thank you, Chair.
Well, thank you, Chair. I don't want to talk on the bonus here, but I just want to compliment the department, because really, both the two speakers refer to the problems that we experience, especially with the Richtersveld issue. I had my all the help with the CPA. And I'm so glad that you eventually is moving into the right direction so that we can really change the whole setup of CPA. The implementation, because I gave the minister that time for time frames, we asked for time frames in our committee on the Richtersveld issue. I wanted to know how long will this take to implement, because the community is sick and tired, because those people do everything. They don't care about anything. Even with us, they want to even get personal with us when we get in touch with them at the time. And it was so worse that the department warned us that we cannot go into the community because those people are very dangerous. Our life is in danger. So that's how worse it is. And we really need to bring her in that Richter's community, because it was one of the first land claims that was done at the time. So, yeah, from my side, I just want to understand when are we going to implement and deal with that specific community. For me, it must be the first one that you're going to do. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. I too would like to add my thanks for the presentation this morning. What I'd like to know is the mention that the irregular when members of the CPA don't want to have regular elections, is it because of there's a stipend involved in regards to members who are serving on the CPA. Does the department monitor the elections whenever the elections are taking place to see if it's free and fair? You did mention there is an office that has been set up for these. Is the staff being paid by the department? And my last question is, how does this affect the Ngonyama Trust land in KwaZulu-Natal?
Thank you. Honorable Giver.
I rise certainly in appreciation of the presentation. It was really an eye-opener, well-prepared presentation. So there's the appointment of a registrar. Yeah, I thought it would be able to indicate at which level of government. That's one thing that worries me. And secondly, the registrar has a lot of powers here. I'm worried about the one the register may dissolve a CPA management structure or dismiss its members. There's nothing that says, at least with the approval of the minister or whatsoever, because that register is a human being, can do whatever it pleases at the end of the day and call all the committee members and dissolve them. No, at least we need to guide them on things like that. Because at least the Honorable Smith has said a lot, Chairperson. I thought he was rising to say just one or two questions, but he said a lot for us. Right here, right.
Honorable Julius, Honorable Navaska.
Thank you, Chair. Sorry, my voice is not normal at the moment. Honorable Smith asked some questions, and I'm asking some in a follow-up on that. Under this law, when land is being bought from the CPA, okay, then the CPA has been seen as the acknowledged owner, if I understand it correctly. Would that land be then also be open for or available or according to law for expropriation or not? I'm just looking for what I've written down here. And what will happen if new beneficiaries can't register under the new law? Let me rephrase it. On the constitution that's being adopted, will new beneficiaries being able to register? If they cannot register, what will happen? Will that agreement will it lapse? Where does it stand then? I think these are a few. There are a few legal in these questions. I need we need to address the legality of some of these things, and the whole. Maybe you should first answer, and then I can get to my real concern. Thank you.
Honorable members from legislature, you are also allowed to participate in this. I've just noted Honorable Kiva from Eastern Cape. Another follow-up, Honorable Prince.
let me ask a question for clarity. Is there criteria how you determine the 60% community? And also the CPAs, for that matter, must come out of, I assume, of the 60%. But for me, because in the Richtersveld area, I heard about someone who's from this Western Cape, who's running the CPA from the back, and you are aware of them. So that's all I'm saying. Thank you very much.
No, thank you very much. Before maybe you... Okay, Honourable Smith.
Apology, Chair. Just a second finger on that. I want to follow up where the Honourable Labaskagni ended, to say that, you know, because when if you determine today the owners of the land, the community. New community members might move in. The children come to age, so now they become owners of, co-owners of that property. How will that be? Because now that will influence your 60%, it will influence your decision-making, it will influence the composition of that. And that's, I think that's the core that we need to get to. And how will that be adapted to make sure that that is kept in mind within? Because you know, it's not a stagnant thing like a company. We establish a company together, and that's it. Now, will it be family ownership? Will each family have a share within? Will individuals have a share? We need to understand that dynamics, because that's a very important thing that we have to keep in mind. And the size of families, because one family is only two, and the next family is eight people. So, yeah.
Okay. Oh, thanks. Maybe before you respond, in rural areas, the CPA is, well, you know that chiefs are custodians of land. How do you distinguish, or what is the role of the chief where there are CPAs, the relationship there? And then the last one being, are the CPAs under this amended bill, are they going to be allowed to establish the trust? Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. we will try and deal with the questions in the order in which they were raised. Firstly, starting with questions from Honorable Smith. First, the issue of zoning of land and maximizing potential of the land. You see, unfortunately, the bill does not deal with those, or the Act does not deal with those kind of issues. The Act only deals with the establishment of CPAs as legal entities, and in terms of how they're going to be run and managed and reported to the department. It does not deal at all with land use, what the land is going to be used for, except, as I've indicated, with regard to the requirement that the land be registered with proper plans in terms of the Land Survey Act. That's all. That's the only extent to which the bill and the Act deals with registration and similar issues. But it does not deal with land use, whether it's going to be for agriculture or for any other purpose, for that matter. And that is simply because we acknowledge that the land is privately owned, so which means the owners determine for themselves how they're going to be using the land going forward, as long as they comply with the provisions of the Act to the extent that they're required to comply with them. As to how much land has been sold by, I guess you are referring to the CPAs. We don't have that information. I cannot tell you. But we have had instances where we were told that land has been sold. There have been disputes arising out of that. We don't have information in terms of how much land has been sold by CPAs so far. It was also asked as to what measures are we putting in place to ensure that the reporting provisions that I spoke about that require CPAs to report to the department and to the CPA office that is going to be established, that will assist us in terms of knowing what's happening on the ground and to be ensured that there is compliance. And also, if you look at the provisions relating to the disposal of land, it means no land will be sold now without the department being aware of it, because it must first be offered to the department for sale, as an example. And also, when resolutions are taken that require communities to come together to arrive at the 60% that is required, in some instances, they require the department to assist them with the conduct of elections in terms of how decisions are made at the end of the day. Now there was an important question that was asked in relation to how do we differentiate between legitimate members and non-members. The department on its own is not able to do that. But if you look at the provisions of the if you have the Principal Act, at the end there is a schedule. And it's a schedule that I referred to in my presentation earlier, that tells us what the CPA must provide for in its constitution. Now, first and uppermost of those issues is that the CPA, the community must indicate, that is item 5 of the schedule to the Act, which, as I've said, appears at the end of the Principal Act. It says that the commission of the CPA must provide for the following, for instance. It says it must provide for the qualifications for membership of the association, including a list of names and, where readily available, identity numbers of the intended members of the association, provided that where it is not reasonably possible to provide for names. This is the case of children, for instance, who are still to be born and others. Of all the intended members concerned, the commission shall provide for the principles for the identification of other persons entitled to be members of the association. Principles that are applicable. It could be that we say that if, for instance, the Ramasala household, as an example, is one of the first beneficiaries. The Queenstown might well say the principle that the descendants of the Ramasala, maybe from the paternal, I'm just giving an example, from the paternal lineage, will become members. That you're defining membership by principle, because at that point you're not be able to say with certainty that I'm going to have offsprings who have children and so on and so forth and so forth. And it also says that the council must provide for the procedure for resolving disputes regarding the right of other persons to be members of the association. You I think in your follow-up question, honorable member, you spoke about the new members. How do new members become members? The council must provide for that. If it's not able if the association is not able to do that, at the time when it must be able to define a principle that explains membership. It's an important issue, because we have heard a lot of instances where you have beneficiaries who may at first be clearly defined, and then they form a community. Over a period of time, you have people coming to settle, sometimes with the permission of the beneficiary community. Some instances, maybe not with the permission. In some instances, in areas where CPAs are under the jurisdiction of traditional authorities, in some instances, traditional authorities put people there on land that is supposed to be privately owned. And I will deal with that when I deal with the question that deals with traditional leadership. Now, those are some of the important, I think, over the weekend, I think there were reports in the newspapers about 2 weeks back where we have seen houses being demolished. I think it was in Pumalanga somewhere, I'm not sure. It appears that is land that is owned by a trust, which could be an equivalent of a CPA, where you have people who may have been the initial beneficiaries who say these are land that they settled there. And then we have people who believe that they are also members of that beneficiary community who go and erect structures there because they believe that they have the right to that piece of land, only to find that in terms of maybe the constitution, the understanding of the original members, they are not supposed to be there. And that's where disputes arise. There was an issue around, I think I dealt with the issue of members coming in. There was an issue of tribal designation of membership. The Act has nothing to do with that. The Act doesn't prescribe who can form a CPA in terms of racial or ethnic or tribal designation. It has nothing to do with that. Where it happens, maybe it's by it's because of the history of the area or the people. But the Act has got nothing to do with you know, whether only a certain group of people can you know whether barely speaking people like Bora Masala and they include my cousins from other. No, it has nothing to do with that. The issue of individual ownership also tying to that, the issue of share certificates. There is nothing that prevents a CPA to decide how he's going to subdivide his property amongst his members. The Act doesn't deal with that at all, because we recognize that is land that is privately owned by that particular community. They can decide to own it as a community in terms of the Act, where the CPA is like some kind of communal land, but they can decide to subdivide it among themselves. There is nothing that prevents that from happening in terms of the Act. Traditional authorities, this is a contentious issue. Maybe I should deal with it in relation to the question raised by Honorable Singh, I think in relation to the Nguanyama Trust land. You see, the Act does not say anything with regard to that, because it's not dealing with those issues. But the implications of it are this. The land deals with land that is privately owned. Now, privately owned land in terms of our history, as for instance, let me talk about Blacks First, where we have issues of traditional leadership, we have got jurisdictions in terms of the COPTA legislation. What it will mean is that if the land that belongs to CPA happens to be under the jurisdiction of a traditional authority, then it means that land falls under that jurisdiction. But we must remember that is land that is privately owned, because it's not communal land in the sense of other communal land that for instance have not been the subject of restitution, that has been given back to its ownership. I'm sure you'll understand the distinction between the two. The other land that I'm talking about, which is not privately owned, is the land that in terms of the current law is held in trust by the state for black communities, dating as far as the Black Administration Act, when it was deemed that blacks cannot own property. As a perpetual minor, land can only be held on their behalf by the state. Now, we still have that arrangement even as we speak now, where in our villages, our title to land is in the form of permission to occupy in many instances, which is not, it's not ownership in the sense that it entitles you to a title deed. Of course, the other legislation that deals with that, if you want to convert that into a title deed, you can approach the deeds office, provide certain conditions are met, you can transfer. But with regard to CPA land, firstly, it is privately owned. Now, it may appear that it falls under the jurisdiction of a chief or traditional leader. Now, if that is the case, now, in terms of COPTA legislation, that deals with the jurisdiction of traditional leadership. That land falls under the chief. Then it means that land will fall under the, but it's privately owned. Now, I would imagine that in all fairness, a traditional leader must deal as a traditional leader as a governance structure. A traditional leader as a governance structure must deal with that land as land that is privately owned by that particular community. That's my understanding of how it should happen. Now, coming to the Ngonyama Trust, that's a complex situation in this sense. Remember, the Ngonyama Trust is not a private trust. It's a public trust. It's a trust that is established by law to perform a function in terms of legislation. It's not a privately owned trust that owns privately owned land. No, it's a public trust in whose hands land is vesting by virtue of legislation. So that land is not privately owned, it's public land. It's occupied by communities, but held in trust by a trust established by law. Which means that if there is any land that may fall under that area that is restricted to a CPA, and the CPA owns that, it must be understood that that CPA owns that land privately. And I'm sure I've heard of instances where there is land, for instance, that is under the jurisdiction of the Ngonyama Trust that is being claimed by communities as individuals. And if those claims succeed, for instance, some may have already succeeded, I'm not sure, but if those, some of them succeed and they get, then it means that land will be privately owned by that particular community, irrespective of the fact that they fall under the... So there's going to be an issue during the claim processing. I suppose the trust will go there and say, we own this land in terms of the Ngonyama Trust Act. The community will say, no, this is our land. And there has to be some kind of a resolution in terms of the existing laws that deal with restitution. I think I've dealt with the questions from Honorable Smith. Honorable Mlambo, the issue of protecting whistleblowers. The Act does not deal with that specifically, but instances where acts of corruption, acts of intimidation are reported to the department, to the extent the department is able to intervene and assist in the community, we will do that. But bear in mind that is privately owned land, as I'm trying to emphasize throughout the presentation. The issue of the constitution, whether we have a standard constitution or it's community specific, it's both. The constitution will be community specific in the sense that it must identify certain community members as the beneficiaries. But on the other hand, as I've indicated, if you look at the schedule to the Act, at the end of the Act, it tells you that these are the standard provisions that must be in a constitution. In a sense, you have standard provisions that you must have, and those that will be specific to individual communities. The Honorable Prince, the issue of how long it will take to implement the bill, well, that is dependent upon this Honorable Committee processing the bill, and then the President assenting to it, then we implement it as the department. Yes, and then is there a criteria for determining the 60%? As I've indicated, firstly, it must be the 60% of the member that would have been identified either by name, ID number, or principal in the Constitution who have the right to make decisions. And I must emphasize this. For instance, if it is the Ramasala family that is part of the beneficiary community, it must be decided in the Constitution, how is that household going to be participating in the election? Are we saying that... Are we sending the eldest male relative, as it used to be the case in our old villages, or every adult in the household has the right to vote? That must be determined by the community itself in its constitution, you know, how decisions are going to be made.
There's one follow-up. Even if I'm moving to to that Richtersveld now, will I be able to be part of my own zone?
That's actually what I want to know. The historical people from that place is part of the whole community thing, or is anyone who is moving now to that place?
As I've indicated, if Honorable Prince was to look at the provisions, I'm not sure that you have the Principal Act with, because it's only the bill only amends the schedule to a certain extent, but it doesn't provide for the entire schedule. But at least even in the bill it is there at least. And if you look at page 17 of the bill, look at clause 21. If members could look at clause 21 of the bill, which is an amendment to the schedule, to the act that I'm referring to, and you look at item 5, is the one that I read earlier from the Principal Act, which is with the schedule. Now, for Honorable Prince to know whether she is a beneficiary or not, 5 years. So that it describes how Honorable Prince would qualify or not qualify. It has nothing to do with the historical background to the issues. So it's either Honorable Prince would have been, either her household would have been identified by name, ID number, or by principle, as I've tried to indicate earlier. The questions raised by Honorable Singh the issue of the governance structure, committee members of CPAs who refuse to leave office when their term in some instances is simply because they are in positions of power. We even politically have had instances where people have been elected into office, refused to leave office when they are requested to do so. So it may not be so much the issue of stipend. It may have something to do with it, but it's not something that comes from the department. The department does not pay or provide a stipend for CPA members. They themselves decide as a community how they're going to reimburse or remunerate persons who sit in the committees or governance structures. The issue of the the staff in the office of the CPA office, as I've indicated, I've said the office is established within the department. It means they are government officials, so that they get the salaries like any other official in government. I think I tried to deal with the issue of Ingonyama Trust, and the less I said about it, the better. Honorable Giba, the issue of the registrar at what level, we have left it open in the Act so that the minister can make a determination when the office is established at what level to put it at. The current official responsible for CPAs in the department is at level 13, for instance, the director level. So it could be that may be elevated to a higher post. The power of the registrar to dissolve or dismiss a member, I heard the Honorable Member saying that power should be mitigated maybe by it must be with approval of the minister. And one would also imagine that it should maybe also have been with the approval or recommendation of the community itself. I think those are some things that we can look at. As things stand now, we have not decided. We have not put that as those conditions in the bill. But what the bill only says is that if you look at page 11 of the bill, page 11, if you look at which is clause 10, and then you go to paragraph D, which is line 33. page 11, line 33. It says, on good cause shown and having heard the parties concerned. So there is a process at least that must unfold before that happens. There must be a reason for the registrar to be wanting to dissolve a committee or dismiss a member. So the registrar must also have heard the interest parties, why the member must be dismissed. Maybe the member also will go and respond why it should not be dismissed. So at least there is some checks and balances in that regard. Questions from Honorable Labus Kahne. Whether the CPA held land will be available for expropriation. It's a difficult question, but purely from a legal point of view, because it's land that is going to be privately owned. There is nothing that prevents the state from expropriating if it wants to expropriate it. I can give an example. I mean, for instance, the land that has, the example that I gave earlier of the land in Mpumalanga, where certain individuals went to erect structures. They formed a small community on land that could be belonging to a CPA. I'm just giving an example. Let's say that when the people become aware that their houses are going to be demolished, the government may well say, maybe we must intervene to protect them and assist them. But how does the government do that? Because that is privately owned land. If the owners legitimately or in law are of the view that the people settling there are invading their land and they have no right to be doing that, and then the state, on the other hand, is saying, but that may well be so, but there must be a solution instead of demolishing the structures. The state may decide to expropriate that piece of land to give it to that particular community that's already settled there as a measure of trying to resolve a dispute between the two communities, as an example. I'm not saying that's what should have happened, because I'm not trying to provide solutions to things that already happened, but I'm just giving an example. That because it is privately owned land, there is nothing that says that it cannot be the subject of expropriation in terms of the current expropriation legislation. Will new members be able to register? I think I've dealt with that question in terms of how do new people who may not have been part of the initial beneficiary community, how do they come into the community? It's either they come lawfully or legitimately if they can prove that in terms of the concern of the CPA, in terms of item 5 that we have read more than once, do they qualify as members of that particular community or not? If they qualify, they should be able to enforce their right to settle on that beneficiary land. If they are not, I suppose the initial settlers will have the right to stop them from settling on their land. I think I've dealt with that. I think there was a follow-up from Honorable Smith in relation to that about the children. I spoke about children could be identification by principle instead of by name, because at the time when the question is put together, they may not be existing. There were two issues, questions raised by Honorable Chair. The issue of the role of traditional leaders, I think I tried to explain that as well, that the land remains privately owned, albeit under the jurisdiction of traditional leaders, and should be dealt with. It will not be different from is that that is not, it's not, because we don't have instances where, for instance, I mean, I come from a village where we are surrounded by farms, obviously owned by white people, and then surrounding our village. And our village is another jurisdiction of traditional leader. The irony is that if I buy a farm which is adjacent to my village, but I decide to continue staying on my farm, it would mean that if I assume residential status on the farm. I'm no longer under the jurisdiction of the chief. Yeah? But when I decide to come to my village, I am under the chief. You know, that shows you the irony of the apartheid kind of special arrangements that we have. But the bottom line being that if a land is registered to a CPA, it becomes privately owned land. If it falls under the CPA, under the traditional leadership, in terms of the cocktail legislation, it does that still being privately owned. And the owners would have the right to protect their rights, they have the right to realize their rights, as against traditional leader, who wants to deal with the land as if it is not privately owned. Okay, the question whether CPAs can establish trust. If we look at the I think it is one of the first clauses in the bill that deals with the definitions. Firstly, we have the definition of a similar entity. Members will know that includes trust. And then if we look at there is a provision that says that I'm trying to look for it quickly. I think it is in the. I think in the application. I suspect it's in the application of the Act, where trusts, in terms of the CARE Act, they can transform themselves into CPAs, and they must be dealt with. I think it may be in the transitional provision, because currently we have got trusts that want to register or redesign themselves as CPAs. The bill and the Act provides for that kind of designation. Thank you very much, Chair.
Honorable Smith, Honorable Lavaskarne, Honorable Julius.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. Okay, I understand, obviously, that the land use is a separate matter altogether. But it, you know, there's no reference at all within that, because it will influence the use around that. So it influences it at the end of the day. There's an interaction between. So I'm concerned that there's no cross-reference to that at all. In terms of the sale of land, you know, if you want to regulate something, you must be able to determine what is happening. And it feels like there's not going to be control. You're going to base the implementation part on what you are being given by the same community that you want to comply. So it's concerning. There's a problem here. It's not realistic, this implementation, the implementation of the Act. I'm concerned about that. The same with the 60%. You know, folks, if you leave it up to that, and there's not a framework to say, but this is the condition around that, because now a majority of a community or a certain group of the community can decide to exclude certain community members within the constitution to set it up, because the constitution is there to set to protect that the entire community. So I'm providing for the unforeseen side, because in the perfect world, yes, everybody will be treated the same. But the reality out there is it's not happening. So it is, again, it's very difficult under the current this proposal, the regulation part, the compliance. You know, it's very vague. It's leaving it open. You know, it's concerning. That's really concerning. It's not doing anything. We're still hanging in the air. In terms of the ownership, you know, I understand you leave it up to, it's, as you said, privately owned land, and you leave it up to that community to determine whether they subdivide or don't subdivide. But then I want to ask the department, what, where and how are you planning to address this section in the Constitution? And let me just read this. Chapter 2, Section 25, Subsection 5. The state must take reasonable legislative and other measures within its available resource to force the conditions which enable citizens to gain access to land on an equitable basis. Subsection 6. A person or community whose tenure of land is legally insecure as a result of past racially discriminatory laws or practices is entitled to the extent provided by an Act of Parliament, either to tenure which is legally secure or comparable redress. So, I mean, this is specifically, we've got a responsibility to make sure that we make the playing field in this country level, because those communities are being deprived from the rights which all other citizens of this country have. And now we're developing an act that is not doing much, because I'm worried about implementation. If we look, and I've mentioned a few things already, we're doing something that's not going to do anything, because that's how I feel. If we say privately owned land, and I had a lot of time, privately owned land, yes, it's, you can give it a nice name, privately owned land, but if you can't trade in that land, then it's got zero value. What gives this cell phone value? Somebody want it? I can sell it? The more people want it, the more expensive it's going to be. So you give value to it. But if you can't trade in it, it's got zero value. And that's what we're doing. We're depriving, we want to economically free in the people which are previously disadvantaged, but we don't want to give them ownership. We don't want to give them economic freedom and value in their hands. They've got houses, nice houses out there, that can be sold for 850,000, 1 point something million, 2 million rand, but it's worth nothing. So they can't even, they can't get access to any of them. And it's again, this is an opportunity that we're losing to fix this. It's an opportunity to fix this. The question around intimidation and decision-making processes, there must be minimum standards to say, but this is how it must happen. You can't just leave it up to and say, oh, you know, and then you still want them to comply to 60% of that. If there isn't a framework which says, but this is how it must happen. There must be a framework on how this decision-making process must happen. Because you can't say, oh no, when they report it to me. Are you going to go and attend to each and every community member in this country who comes and complain about being intimidated by decision-making individuals within a community? How are you going to handle that? It's not going to be possible. You need to work in protective measures within this to ensure that these people are protected and people are not intimidated. Not to leave it open to say, oh, but they can come and complain with us. It's not good enough.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to ask a few clarity questions on the on the schedule of the Principal Act. You said that the schedule gives the information on the
on what should be provided for the CPA when it is registered. Now, I would like to know, at the moment, as I understand it, and maybe I'm not correct, but how many CPAs are registered at the moment? Do we know that? And if we don't know that, how will we know when all of them are registered? And then the second question is, at the moment, in your department, how do you know that those who are registered and that's out there and that's functioning have provided the information as outlined in the schedule in the Principal Act? Because if you don't know that, how can you monitor that? Now, say for instance, this bill, which I understand is trying to correct these things. What in this bill gives me the security or the confidence that all these things will be addressed and that CPAs will now comply? And you referred, because one of the questions that I also had is that you highlighted now in Section 21 that they determine the five-year period. Because one of my questions also is, if I registered the CPA in 1970 or something like that, sorry for that, and I didn't comply to the schedule in the first place, and I comply to whenever changes happens, I put the names in and so on. But nobody checked on me ever before. I slipped through the cracks. How are we going to ensure that each and every CPA that's going to be registered comply to the schedule? Because that is where everything starts. If you don't have control and monitoring of that schedule and the information, how will you go forward and say, from this has been fixed on this date, and from this date onwards, we can monitor that every 5 years, and whatever is going to happen there, we can monitor because we've got all in writing. Because with all due respect, as we're sitting here, we can go play politics about it, we can do whatever we want, or we can just be straightforward as South Africans as being concerned. We know that land restitution and what's going on in land has not been adequately addressed and managed by either the previous Department of Agriculture and now the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform, because there was not capacity and there was no budget. That's it. We can go around and talk about changing Section 25, we can play politics for elections, we can do whatever we want. But every reasonable South African who can read and calculate and do the sums knows that these are the reasons. Now, we want to do bills to correct us. Now, I had a former boss that told me, the path to hell is paved with good intentions. The intentions are good. I don't question the intentions. I question the practicality of this. Because we cannot monitor this. And it can't be forced compliance. I don't see how anything else is going to be fixed. Because as your department told this committee, there are so many problems within the CPAs, existing CPAs, where the community, people in that part of that group in the CPA start fighting with each other and their own management. It's chaos. And does the department, if you don't have a baseline of information that can be monitored, I can't see how the department will have the capacity and will be put in an unfair, disadvantaged position again to try and resolve conflicts and disputes within these within the CPAs. Thank you.
Oh, thank you very much, honorable members. Honorable, yes, I've recognized you. But the point that I want to make is that the amendment of this bill has nothing to do with the election, honorable members. Let's deal with this matter and make inputs and forget about the elections. Honorable Julius?
We must worry about the elections, Chairperson. Maybe you retire, but I'm still young. I must worry.
That's a joke.
I withdraw unconditionally, Chairperson. But I think, my apologies for being late or delayed. Chairperson, the first concern that I have is in terms of the Constitution, security of tenure. There are current proposed changes that will start in the NDA and eventually come to the NCOP. The high-level panel, headed by the ex-president Kgalema Motlanthe, said that this bill should be halted. It must be stopped first, and then you can continue check what is happening. Read. I want to know whether you actually ignored that recommendation, because it's a current recommendation, and we must look at these current recommendations, because it's a recommendation. It wasn't a high-level panel from America that says we want to impose on South Africa. It was a high-level panel that was asked by us to say, look at these things. But then we ignore it when it comes. At least if you ignore it, tell us why do you ignore it, and keep on with this piece of legislation. Because I feel that it's like putting on a disposable nappy for a baby. Tomorrow morning you'll dispose it, because the inevitable will happen. Even if you put it at 10 o'clock at night, Chairperson, to the nation, Pampers on, tomorrow morning it will be gone. It will be disposed of. So I can't understand why the department persists with this while there's so much happening in land reform that will impact on what we are doing now. I clearly do not understand. And then secondly, Chairperson, the registrar will be in charge of a lot of things in terms of the CPAs. The registrar may dissolve a CPA management structure or dismiss its member, require the CPA to elect a new committee. The registrar may appoint an interim committee pending the election of a new committee. The affairs of a CPA placed under administration may be run by the registrar. Now, we know that the registrar is actually under the minister and the department, and that's government. That's government overreach. You are actually depriving people of their land, the management of their land. That's an overreach by the registrar, the department, and government. Government should not be in a place where they tell people or manage, micromanage people. People must be given their space out there so that they can actually, you can have all these things in order. If you have legislation that they must abide with. But why must government come in every time and say, ek is die groot boetie, I'm the principal or the teacher in this class, and you must do X, Y, and Z. There must be regulations for them, and then you leave them at that, Chairperson. I'm not one to say that there must be government overreach. And when you talk about government overreach, it actually impacts on Section 25.1 of the Constitution, where it clearly states on the second part, and no law may permit arbitrary deprivation of property. It may lead to that. If you give too much power to the government through the registrar, the minister, and the department. I don't agree with that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Honorable.
You know, I think I'm rising. Yes. In supplementing what Honorable Chair has said about the case of deep rural areas and the fact that the traditional authorities, they are in authority. I would then, Chairperson, suggest, if it is possible, not unless it has already been done, that the setting of this nature should, in the near future, have a representative from the House of Traditional Leaders, or else in the plans or the program of the legal the right unit, and as well, yeah, they have to meet the traditional leaders. We do have houses for traditional authorities, so that they understand, because right at the cutting edge where the communities are, there are traditional authorities, and the act is too quiet on the bill about the involvement of traditional authorities. Even the register, it says it may appoint somebody else for whatsoever, and there's nothing that speaks to say we can appoint a traditional to work with the traditional authorities, I don't know. But Chair, the conflict is rife down there, even around land reform. We can't again add this without ensuring that we have made a floor where the traditional authorities are engaged and debate and do some inner inputs around the bill.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Maybe I should start with the last question, on because it is very much central to the debate, traditional leadership. That's why we have tried to emphasize throughout that this is land that is privately owned. Now that on its own, shows some uncertainty in our understanding of land that is privately owned in relation to traditional leaders. And I'll explain why. Because traditionally, what has been happening to communal land as a result of successive apartheid government laws, communal land has been administered by traditional leaders. That's not a natural phenomenon. It happened because a law was passed at a certain point to say land that is occupied by blacks in traditional shall be administered by chiefs. And it continues to be the case even today. The permission to occupy that I spoke about earlier in my village is issued by a traditional authority, traditional council. That is because that land is owned or is held by the state in trust for traditional communities. As I've said in the past, because at the time, blacks were deemed not to be able to own land as individuals. They had to own land as a community. Now, because we have that history of communal land being administered by chiefs, when it actually still vests in the state, it means it's still owned by the state. The residents are simple occupiers. That's why the certificate says permission to occupy. Now, enter a new dispensation where blacks in the form of communities are allowed to own land privately in the form of land that is being restituted, as an example. Because the land belonged to the community even before many of these laws were passed. People are able to prove that this is the land that we owned as a community. And some of the communities at the time when they owned the land, they didn't have chiefs in the particular areas. And even today, some continue to dispute that they're under the jurisdiction of any other chiefs. They will say, this is the land that we bought as a community. And historically, we never had a chief in our area. And of course, there will be the chief will say, no, but this is performed under my jurisdiction. And they will say, no, this is land that we own as a community. And we never owed allegiance to this particular chief. But there is that dispute. Now, that's an issue. The resolution of disputes of that nature does not lie with our department. It lies with COCTA. Because COCTA explains, you know, the jurisdiction of traditional leaders over certain areas, and what you are only dealing with in this bill, in this act, is land that has been registered to a community that is owned by that community, which is no longer held in trust by the state for the community. And that's why there is this a conflict, I think, of views, where the people own the land as individuals now. Let me say, as beneficiaries, that has been restituted. They may have a title deed to that particular land. They may decide whether maybe to subdivide it, I'm not sure. But the fact remains that the land is owned privately by that community, which ordinarily or historically was never allowed to own land as a community in terms of apartheid laws. And that's where I think there is a bit of confusion. Now, we must accept that we're going to be dealing with that situation, that there will be CPAs in areas under the jurisdiction of chiefs. But what I'm saying is that the chiefs must recognize the fact that this land is privately owned. It's not the land that they administer historically in terms of the Black Administration Act and the other acts that preceded this particular piece of legislation. I think it must be understood in that context. Okay, going back to the question of maybe let me start from the beginning with Honorable Smith again. The issue of land use. Well, the only extent to which the Act deals with that, the bill, is if you look at clause 3 that deals with general plans and registration of property. It tells you that in the plans for the property, it must be indicated what the land is designated for. That is the only extent to which we deal with that. But we are not saying this land must be used for ABC. We are simply saying it must indicate what is going to be used for. That's all we can say. That is the clause that deals with general plans and registration of the property. That is clause 3, which inserts a new section 2A. Now, a lot was said about implementation. Reference was also made to Section 25 of the Constitution that deals with strengthening tenure, which is what I think Mr. Honorable Julius also raised. The in relation to Section 25, all what the bill is doing and the Act recognizes that in the fact that we continue to talk about the privately owned land. CPA land is not your communal land in the sense of the one that I just described, which is administered by chiefs, which vests in the state. When the land is restituted, there is a title deed that goes with it to show that it's privately owned land. Now, if that is not tenure security, I can't think of any other security of tenure. Now the fact that as the department we are regulating that, on the other hand, is seen as overreach. And on the other hand, if we are not assisting where there are disputes, we are seen as not doing anything as the department. Now, as we have to balance between the two, the rights of people who own that land privately, and the rights of others where disputes arises, for instance. And the Act is, the bill is not saying they cannot sell that land or they cannot dispose of that land. All we are saying is that if they're going to be disposing of that land, because that land was first acquired by the state, it must only be offered to the state for sale in the first instance. So the state can decide if they want to, they can buy it, and then resettle other people. That's what we are saying. We are not saying they cannot do as they please with their land. Our intervention is measured, and we think that it is proper to do that. Like I've indicated, and I think this issue was also raised by Honourable Julius, that we recognise the right to private property. At the same time, because it is private property that was gained at the assistance of the state, that's why we continue to intervene in some instances to assist in the management of CPAs, because there have been problems, as I've indicated. Honourable Labuskakhne, how many CPAs are registered? I think we've mentioned that in our introductory remarks. We have about 1,500. And then, now what happens is that a CPA that is regulated by the, is the one that has been registered with the CPA office, with the registrar's office. If it's not registered, it's not recognized as a CPA, so we don't even know that it exists. Now, there is a process of registration. If you go through the provisions of the Principal Act, it tells you what needs to happen. They will send the registrar to the department. The department helps them with the adoption of the constitution. The department sends an official who must report back to the department to say that indeed there was a requisite majority. The people were identifiable, the provisions, what must be, what when the constitution has been provided for, as a process to assist them to establish the CPAs, to be able to manage the affairs of the CPAs. Maybe it's also important to quickly check, if I can just run, because sometimes looking at the bill in isolation from the Act, it may give the impression that there are certain things that are not governed, because we are only looking at the bill. If you look at the Act quickly, I can just indicate the things that the Act provides for, so that people or honourable members are rest assured that there is a lot of that is happening. Firstly, it deals with the drafting of the Constitution of the CPA. I've spoken about that, things that must be in the Constitution. That is Section 6. And Section 7 deals with the adoption of what must happen before the Constitution of the CPA is adopted, the requirements that must be met. And it talks about the registration of CPA with the department. It also talks about the principles to be accommodated in the constitution of the CPA, that in the Act as well. Then the Act also provides for information, conciliation, and other assistance that the department provides to CPAs for them to be able to run their affairs. There are provisions related to monitoring and inspection. These do not come from the bill, they come from the Principal Act, which we are amending, which have already been there. The department has a responsibility to monitor and inspect CPAs to ensure that they are properly run. There is a provision that deals with the approval of certain transactions, the one that I spoke about when they want to dispose of land or movable property. It's not something that was touching with the bill, it's already there in the Principal Act. It deals with administration, liquidation, and that's some of the things that Honorable Julius referred to. That is not an invention of the bill, it's already in the Act. We have CPAs that can be put under administration because they're legal entities, as I've indicated. Then the offices are there, we're simply adding to some of them. And maybe coming to Honorable Julius, The first issue that was raised was issue around the security of tenure, reference to Section 25 of the Constitution that seeks to provide for that. All I'm saying is that this bill reinforces security of tenure. We are not taking away anybody's right to to enjoy his right to property. All we are saying is that we are intervening in instances where the state, we believe, requires to be assisting. Okay, that was the issue about the overreach. I think I spoke about that as well. On the other hand, we are seen as overreaching, whereas on the other hand, we are seen as assisting communities that require assistance. I spoke about traditional leadership at length. I think that takes us to the end of the... the high-level panel issue. To the extent that I've read that report, what it says about this CPA Act, it says it's a serious challenge. They have identified that committee members of the CPA regard CPA property as their own property, that there is no distinction between the CPAs as legal entities and the communities they serve. And as a result, the CPAs as legal entities assume that they own the property and they can deal with it as they deem fit, to the exclusion of beneficiary communities. That is the challenge they raised. And that's what we are trying to deal with in the bill, for instance, to make the point that CPAs as legal entities do not own communal land in isolation from the beneficiary communities. They transact on behalf of those communities. And by that, I think we are trying to resolve the challenge that has been raised in the high-level panel report, in my view. The part where it says we must withdraw the bill, that I have not seen.
I think this bill should be trying to bring us closer to finding a way going forward. There will be interested and affected parties that should also make submissions. But having got the input by Honorable Prince citing Rachtersveld, there's another case on the Bakhafel in Rustenburg, which is an example of the conflict the community and the traditional leadership. So as we make inputs, I think this response should try to allay that serious concern and fear that whether this bill is indeed going to play an important role in ensuring that minimize these conflicts that are in the CPA throughout the country. Honorable Smith and follow-up.
Thank you, Chair. I'm actually gone on, even more questions came up. But the first thing when I raised my hand was the previous minister in Quinty at the land in Dauba, specifically it was discussed, where these communal land which is state-owned, there's a move towards registering them under CPAs. So then automatically, you know, we must provide for that as well. We must be forward thinking around this thing. We can't say, oh, now it's now only the land that's been restituted that is under CPA, because there's a move to get those as well under, because communities are disillusioned with some of their tribal authorities that they feel is not administering their land properly. And also that same problem of it's my land and you're staying on my land, you know, that that's going on. But I just wanted to correct you on that, because I'm speaking out of that perspective that it's not only about now. You develop a law not for today but also for the future. So the second thing is I find it, and sorry to be quite blatant, a bit hypocritical to say that the state bought the land for those people, but they were actually the rightful owners of that land. They are the rightful owners of that land. Is government just helped to reinstate the ownership of the land by buying it for them? So then you can't say no, because government now paid for it to give you back your land, which actually belongs to you, which you are the rightful owner for. Now you must first give government the first choice. Then it must be equal to every private owner throughout this country to say before you sell your property, you must first give government the opportunity to purchase it back. We can't have double standards here. And because that is privately owned land, and they are the rightful owners of that land. Then, Chair, in terms of the question around the tribal, you know, tribal authority and all, I hope, and maybe I should put the question, you know, has this also been sent to the House of Traditional Leaders during the NA process? I've got a report, but I'm not. I want to be sure whether there's that engagement as well, because they are obviously a stakeholder. But my suggestion would be, because I want us to do this correctly, Chair. It's a Section 76 bill, so it's obviously going to go to the provinces. But we mustn't make the mistake that we've made with the other bills before. We must finalize our process, which is our own public participation and consultation process, make amendments as a committee, then send that to the provinces for their public participation process, and then it will come back with negotiating mandates, and then we move to final mandates. So that we don't make the mistakes where we have a situation again where these two processes are running duly, because then we're going to have problems. Then we are being deprived the opportunity to also do our own, and then it's going to be counterproductive. But I would propose, I mean, tribal authority and different stakeholders, this will be very important that we have submissions from them, that we have engagements with them, so that we really make sure that this bill at the end of the day brings value, and it's not just done for the sake of saying, oh, but we're giving people 10-year security. Because I've picked up at the land in Dabo that people are feeling very, very strongly about this specific issue. And it's a very serious issue, and it's going to have great implications to those communities that we want to ensure start to have ownership and economic freedom in this country. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe the legal guys can also help us here. But I just want to stress that, you know, the state must be given the opportunity to buy the land back, the first opportunity. The state, you know, you're robbing people, because it's the people's money in the first place that bought that land to give them the rightful land that they owned. It's theirs. Why would you want to play big brother and say, you must first sell it to me first? Why? What if we have a legislation that says government can expropriate without compensation? So my point is, there's too much at stake here, and we cannot be preemptive. We cannot preempt, even though we have seen late night 10 o'clock circuses on TV. I sorry for the word circus, I would throw it, Chairperson, but when the President came out and said, we are going to do this, that's not the stance, it wasn't in Parliament. We cannot preempt that is what will happen. What we can do for now is using this. But if you know that thing is coming up in Parliament, why do you waste time? Why do we waste time to go to people and ask them again now, listen, how do you feel about this bill? Why should we do that? If everything can change in months, maybe it won't change. But what if it changes? There's too much at stake for this bill with the current affairs going on about land. And let's wait. My proposal is let's wait and see what's happening in the NA. And when it comes to us, and then we can do that. But my proposal is that, Chairperson, when the department comes to us, the department is not here to defend. You are here to listen. We are the lawmakers. And you are here to listen.
The whole day, I didn't hear anything where you say, okay, this can work, maybe this can work. You're just here to defend as if you are the lawmakers. You're not the lawmakers. You are proposing this, and we are the lawmakers. And that, really, it puts me back a bit. Because, Chairperson, that's our role, and not the role of officials, to defend a piece of legislation. At least tell me, all right, no, I agree with you there, we can do this and this. Otherwise, you can just stay at home and send it to us, and we can read it, and then we go on with it. But we are here to do our job. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, I wanted to interject on a point of order, but I thought I'll give Honorable Julius a chance to complete. If he's calling the president of the ANC his president, then it's fine, because that announcement at 10 o'clock in the night was the president of the ANC who made that announcement. So if he's saying that he's president of the ANC, well, he's a member of the DA.
Point taken. Can I just to the over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I just wanted to assist the committee with regard to the question by the Honourable Member on whether the traditional leaders were consulted on this bill. I just wanted to say, Chairperson, that the joint-taking mechanism, which is chaired by the Speaker and the Chairperson of the NCOP, which is a committee that decides the procedure in terms of which a bill must be processed within Parliament, decided on this matter, and the decision was that this matter has provisions which pertain to customary law or customs of traditional communities, and that it must be referred to the House of Traditional Leaders in terms of Section 118 of the Traditional Leadership and Governance Framework Act. So in that regard, the traditional leaders were consulted on this act, and we have received no input from that consultation. And number two, Chairperson, on the last issue relating to cross-referencing of the land use management legislation to this act, it is drafting convention, Chairperson, that where you list in the provision, you by implication exclude those that are not listed, because that list is presumably closed. And the other thing, Chairperson, that I want to say in that regard is that where you have not cross-referenced, it does not mean that the applicable legislation is therefore excluded because it's not cross-referenced. It still is applicable. And therefore, where a community has been restituted land and it decided to form a CPA, and the CPA Act did not make a reference to the land use management legislation, it does not mean that that community would not be guided or ruled by the relevant provisions of the land use management legislation. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. And thank you, honorable members, for inputs, thanks. Right, the department just, and I don't want to close the subject. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe in closing, just 2 points. The first one, the case that the Chair referred to, the Vahafela case, that is very much important, because it's a case where the court said to decide that even if communities fall under the jurisdiction of traditional leaders, they can still own land privately in the form of CPA. The court has already confirmed that. And then lastly, Chair, when we were responding, we were not trying to engage in debates. We were simply trying to explain what the provisions provide for, not so much to debate and try to impose our views on the committee. We apologize for that. If that's what came across.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. This is indeed still going to be highly debated. There are interested and affected partners that will send the submission to the Secretary, and we are going to brief our respective provinces, where all the stakeholders will be taken on board as well. Because our provinces will hold their public meetings where they'll be engaging the stakeholders. Also, as the CPA, as the member of the National Council of Provinces, yeah, we are still going to advertise and engage communities, as Honorable Smith had also said. Okay. Thank you very much, Honorable Members. We, the meeting, of course, is adjourned.
Thank you, Chair. Just on the statement you just made, so that it's clear, especially for the officials of the committee as well, in terms of the process that we will follow, so that we have a resolution as a committee around this, that we will do our process, consultation process, and then once that is finalized, then we send it to provinces, so that provinces don't run a parallel process with us, because that is going to be a problem where we're going to have the same problem than before, where we do public participation on our side, and then at the end of the day it's fruitless because we can't do anything with that. So that we finalize our process within the committee, and then it goes to the provinces for their public participation, so that they don't start with their public participation process while we are not finalized and we didn't send our final document that we've processed to them.
Honorable members, what we'll do, we'll release the department and all others. So, honorable members of legislature and members, you can remain so that we can just iron out our internal matters. So the department and others, thank you very much. You are now released. Thank you.